Welcome to Running's Lessons for Life, a podcast series in which we delve into the stories of well-known South African athletes and their most memorable races. I'm Pippa Hudson, and over the next few weeks, I'll be talking to some of our top long-distance runners about the races they won, the races they lost, and the races they still haven't managed to finish. We've asked each of our participating athletes to choose one race that taught them some of their greatest lessons in sport and in life. We hope you enjoy listening to their stories. Erica, the race you've chosen to talk about was the one that surprised everyone, including you, I know. Your first proper ultra trail marathon in some of the harshest terrain on earth. You entered it as a novice to the sport, and then you go and win the thing. I remember reading in your book that that surprised you as much as it surprised anyone else. Take us back to that first race in the Sahara and what was going through your head as you lined up on the start that day.
Sure, Papa, what a privilege to remember the race again, because there's something in positive psychology that we call the effervescence of recall. And it's actually a way to lift your mood and lift your spirits when you remember a high point in your life. And interestingly enough, the Sahara was a low point in my life. I was just coming through a divorce. And very often, as it is with one's body, showing what's really going on in one's life, I had massive ITB in my one leg, so I could barely walk. Never mind run 270 kilometers in the desert, carrying everything that you will need for the whole 7 days on your back.
Everything. All of your food, water, camping equipment, etc.
Everything. Every last morsel of food that you would consume, your medicine, your clothing, your sleeping bag, your mattress. And if you dare take a notebook, you know, that's a huge luxury. We even cut off the ends of our toothbrushes to save that 2 gram of load. Yeah, so you carry absolutely everything except for water. Okay. Water you get as you get along on the race.
You can understand why in the Sahara Desert, I mean, that is a life-threatening. You've got to be able to know that there's water available. Even so, the best of planning, cutting off your toothbrush, weighing everything down to the gram.
Yeah.
I don't know if anything could have mentally prepared you for what lay in front of you. Did you really know what you had undertaken?
So actually, no. I had no idea. I was an adventure racer years before that. So I was used to being out in the wilderness for long periods of time, but never ever running for 7 days nonstop with the load increasing every single day. So going from 25 to 35 to 40 Ks a day, and then you have a long day on the fourth day of 100 kilometers. So nothing can actually mentally prepare you for it. And, you know, Papa, that was perhaps one of the biggest lessons I learned there, was just show up. Sometimes take a big stake, hope, and just show up. Take that first step and the next step will begin to look after itself. You know, even getting to the Sahara, it was an extraordinary miracle that I even got there, because as I arrived at the airport, of course, I had a problem with my visa. The lady at the Lufthansa counter said, sorry, confiscated my plane ticket. It took 2 other plane tickets. I raced from Gatwick to Heathrow, missed the next plane. There was 1 last plane going to the Sahara to Egypt that night, a midnight flight, Air Austria. I threw away everything that I needed to check in, and I stowed away on the flight without a visa, hoping for the best. And when I landed on the other side, I'd alerted the hotel where I was staying and the race organizers. They then possibly phoned some people. But as the plane landed, one of those little trolley carts with a siren came racing across the tarmac to pick me up, military-looking personnel, and they raced me to the terminal, and I thought to deport me. They took me to the business class lounge, gave me a cup of sweet black tea, and offered to let me buy a visa for $100. But I mean, that was the whole point of just show up and the thing will begin to take care of itself.
So you did manage to get there by hook or by crook. You showed up at that start line, not really knowing what lay ahead of you, knowing that you felt something deep inside you, that this was something you had to do. And Erica, you wrote about it in your book so beautifully, about how the emotional weight of what you'd been through personally in those months preceding was on your shoulders that day. And yet somehow along the next 7 days,
you shed it. You shed so much more than just what you brought to the start line. Talk to us about the emotional and physical transformation you went through during that race.
And that was the thing I didn't expect. I mean, obviously winning, I told my mom on the phone I was going to walk the whole race, never mind winning it. But the biggest surprise for me was the amount of healing that happened for me in that desert race. You know, when you go through a divorce, it's a really tough thing. And I know a lot of people will resonate with that. But there was something magical that happened as I moved my body every single day. It was as if though I processed through that trauma by moving my body. And there is a deep truth and a deep science behind that. So every day as I ran more and more, I could literally feel the grief leaving me, little by little. I mean, it didn't completely obliterate it, but I could feel the emotional load lightening. So that was the first thing. And then the second thing that I realized was in this extraordinary landscape of just these vast distances, and you, most of the day, you're alone. And you're running across these large plains of sand, maybe with a few dunes in the distance, and it's 50 degrees Celsius, and you've got all that silence and space. I think there's healing in that as well, it being in this vast expanse of nature. I mean, we even know in hospitals when people face a green wall, or even if they face a tree, they recover faster than people who face a blank wall or no outside landscape. Nature heals. Yeah. And I always had a love affair with nature, but I never consciously knew how it could soothe the soul. And then the third thing that happened there was the Bedouins who live in the desert. They worked alongside the race organizers to set up camp for us every night. And they have such a deep spiritual connection with the desert and such an enormous generosity and gentleness. And I think that generosity comes from scarcity. Mm-hmm. When you live in places of great scarcity, you carry each other. And I'll never forget, Mahmoud always said, "You are welcome." Mm-hmm. But with a gentleness so great that even that healed me. And then they learned eventually. I would sit at night with them and drink sweet black Arabic tea. They learned eventually that I was going through a divorce. And they held me in the gentlest of way, you know, not being soppy or anything, but it was so healing. It was extraordinary.
That's a very special connection you've described there. Is it one you've been able to sustain? Do you know what became of Mahmoud and the other Bedouin? Have you kept in touch with any of them?
You know, so until before COVID, we would send each other Facebook messages every so now and again. And we were actually for the first 4 or 5 years. So the Sahara races was in 2010. It's a long time ago. Yeah. For the first 4 or 5 years, we would be in regular Facebook contact. And then since COVID, we've lost a little bit of touch. But I know all I have to do is send that message and the connection will be as deep as before. Because we also shared that thing about the love affair with the desert. It was really beautiful to have that camaraderie with people like that.
What about the camaraderie of your fellow athletes, especially going in as a novice? Nobody knew, nobody had heard of Erica de Blanche. Certainly nobody expected her to win the race. How did the relationship with other athletes? I mean, because you often, you think of a big endurance, top level event, you think of a degree of cutthroat, win at any costs, I'm in this for my race. Which you can understand is sometimes required to get to the end, but you strike me as somebody who lives life a very different way. Yeah. What was it like for you?
Yeah, so that's very interesting because the spirit of that particular race, and you know, one doesn't know, is it you projecting or is it actually the objective spirit of the race? But my experience of the race was absolutely one of camaraderie first, the experience coming before the podium, that it was about the way that we connected with each other. I mean, you would run with guys all day long. Okay, so maybe here and there, there's some competitive element, a guy that maybe doesn't want to be checked, you know, or a girl who wishes she would want to be on the podium. But it was in that race, I experienced it as not even really present. But it could have been just my mind state at that point and not really racing for a win. I've been in other races. I've been in other endurance races where the spirit was very much about the podium. And the interesting thing is, the more competitive it is, the less deep the connections that you make. And things remain jovial and superficial, but you don't go much deeper. But on this Sahara race, I think there were a lot of people coming through stuff. Mm. And we shared that with each other. There's one guy, Luke Carmichael, who then went on to, a few years later, to circumvent and do Mont Blanc three times.
Oh, wow.
Back to back. Very interesting. We had a deep connection. And several other people. You know, and the connection that you make there is very hard to transfer into life as normal. Mm. It's almost like there was a romance and it remains in that very special capsule. But then to try and take it out of the desert and to make it live in Oxford Street in London.
It's too different. I mean, you had a very different exit from the race as well, because Erica, you didn't even have time to sort of be celebrated as the winner. You had to, that visa that had been arranged for you last minute had a timestamp on it, and you had to just leave and get out and get back to normal life. I guess in some ways, that sort of very abrupt exit might have been like ripping the Band-Aid off and saying, okay, well, you've got to get on to normal life again now. But I mean, how hard was it to one day be running in this awe-inspiring, expansive desert, almost alone out there, this intense sense of connection to the people around you and the place around you, and the next minute to be back going about normal life? How hard was it to adjust?
Absolutely. So it was actually a magical thing that happened, because the taxi waited for me right at the finish line. Mary Gadam, who is the owner of Racing the Planet, handed me my trophy. My friends clapped and I got in the taxi, unwashed for 7 days with my spare little backpack now completely empty of anything. And we head straight to the airport in Cairo. And I don't think I realized what had happened to me in the desert until I sat down in the plane, and there was, I think they were Finnish couple sitting next to me. And the lady saw my trophy, which looks like a Wimbledon tennis
shield.
And she said, "Oh, what is that?" And I started telling them what had just happened to me in these past 7 days. And I burst into tears and cried and cried and cried because it was that feeling of the enormity of what had taken place. On the surface, it looks like nothing, but then accessing it in normal life, I think that connection that we had on that plane for those few minutes, I'll never forget it, and I don't think they will either.
I think they won't.
Yeah, and then, you know, getting back to life as normal, the immediate thing that happens is you begin to look for the next race. Because you've tasted something and you want more of that. And I think whenever we allow ourselves to go into nature in a way that's quite Spartan and go, say, camping in the Cedarburg for a weekend, or if we do something that brings physical joie de vie into our bodies, like climbing Lion's Head, there is something that we touch when we do that, and we want to recreate it as quickly as possible, because we know there's something of life in it, and health and well-being and mental well-being. So that's certainly where my I was then in for 10 years of distance running. had I only known.
And now a lifetime of helping other people dig into the science of happiness and well-being and finding a way to tap into that sense of joy. Erica, one last thing I'm interested in is how your victory in this race changed your perception of yourself. I mean, you went into it as somebody who wanted to see if you could do it kind of thing. You came out of it recognizing, I have the potential to perform at the very top level of the sport. Did you sort of find a new identity for yourself, a new perception of yourself as a top athlete on the back of that victory?
You know, Pippa, I think the emotional stuff I was coming through at that race was so front and central that was definitely the overarching tone of the experience, rather than recreating myself in my own mind. However, I did recognize that it was quite nice to win this race. And I thought, sure, can I do this again? Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I can do this again. But the second race I then participated in was the Atacama in South America and Chile. And for me, it was more a question, a curiosity. Can I do this again? Can I perform at a high level? Rather than a foregone conclusion that I can do this. You know, I guess when something so strange happens, one thinks maybe it's fluke. You don't quite think it's real until you then prove it over again and again.
Final question then, in stepping away from that, as you start repositioning your life and looking to other things now that the sort of the height of competition days move behind you, what's the most valuable lesson you learned from your days running that you take with you into your life today?
Sure, Pippa, we don't have enough time. Mm-hmm. We really don't. But maybe can I say a few things? The first thing is move your body. Move your body. Not exercising is actually a depressant. Exercising is not an antidepressant. It's the other way around. Mm-hmm. Move your body, number one. Number two, make time to get out into nature. Nature heals. We all need it to be whole and full and happy people. And the third thing that I learned through 10 years of endurance running is, you know, when you think you absolutely cannot anymore, I promise you there is more. There is an unlimited reservoir of energy that we can tap into. We are capable of so much more than we think, as long as we do the self-care needed to keep us upright and keep us strong and keep us whole. Things really, yeah.
Thank you for tuning in for Running's Lessons for Life. If you enjoyed today's episode, please share the link with your friends and family and encourage them to listen as well. Who knows, perhaps a future Comrades champion is out there right now in need of a bit of encouragement and inspiration. Tune in again next week for another edition of Running's Lessons for Life. Bye for now.